Danielle Lindler.
Quote, "We feel this is a false statement. Please note that non-concurrence does not constitute a requirement. They are voluntary and serve as an insurance policy to cover the landowner if discharge occurs. As a matter of course, a landowner is completely within his or her rights to operate while not enrolled, but is subject to all applicable penalties for discharge that occurs. For these reasons, the economic analysis, we feel, is not complete. Furthermore, Section 10.3.7 concludes with a statement, there are no additional costs to timber operators associated with TMDL compliance. Limiting cost analysis to timber operators is wholly insufficient. What are the costs to the landowners? Until a complete analysis is completed, again, this section is insufficient. For roughly a year, the Water Board field staff have been using the coming TMDL to substantiate recommendations for submitted THPs. Failure to comply can result in refusing to enroll landowners in the WDRs. For example, the 85-65% shade requirements listed in the implementation plan are not part of the WDRs. Neither is the requirement to leave all trees outside the buffer, which may provide shade where the aforementioned canopy is not present. Neither are the requirements regarding harvested channel zone trees. Yet these standards are already being recommended, and if a landowner refuses, they face non-concurrence of approval of their THP. These standards clearly represent a significant adverse economic impact to landowners through loss of timber revenue. And just to furthermore talk about the impacts, we also feel that the cumulative, in order for the economic section of the TMDL be accurate and complete, that the economic impact should assess the potential for cumulative effects of the impacts. And what I mean by that is the assessment should include all current regulation imposed by the Water Board, Department of Fish and Game, the Board of Forestry rules, specifically the new T&I rules. Even if the proposed TMDL does not in and of itself pose a significant impact, which we refute, it is clear that we feel that the cumulative effect of all these rules is an impact. And it is clear that ranching, ag, and timber communities are operating under an even decreasing margin, and any new financial burdens could be significant. And just to punch home that point, I have some numbers from 1997 to 2007 on timber harvest trends. And just to show what the already burdensome regulatory process has done to the industry, the number of THPs approved by CDF has decreased by 63%. In 1997, there was 1,008 THPs approved in the state. 371 were approved in 2007. Yet, when you look at the cost of the regulating agencies to review those plans, and this is from the LAO and State Budget Committee state budget documents, TH program costs for all agencies to review the plans were $10 million in fiscal year 97-98 and $23.1 million in fiscal year 2007-2008. What that equates to is the cost to review a THP in 1997 by the agencies was $9,920 a plan. In 2007-2008, it's $62,260 a plan for the agencies to review. This does not include the cost of the landowners. What this does do to the landowners, though, is since 1987, we've had a total of 92 mills closed down in this state. We're losing our infrastructure in this state. 42% of California's primary forest products manufacturers have shut down just since 1997, with an additional 3 mills just this year. So with that, I ask you guys to not ignore the fact that for the last 30 years, this state has been implementing environmental protection rules. I think the resource users, forestry, ranching, and ag, should be given some credit that things aren't as bad as the other side, the opposition, makes it out to be, that there has been progress in our industries. that we do have licensed professionals, especially in forestry, to make sure that timber harvest is done to meet the letter of the law under the Clean Water Act, the State Forest Practices Rules, the Endangered Species Act, the Clean River or the Scenic Rivers Act, and the list goes on. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for comments. Questions? Deborah McConnell, followed by Zeke Grader.
Hi, my name is Deborah McConnell, and I work for the California Indian Basket Weavers Association.
And if you would just crowd in on that pull to you, appreciate it.
Should I start over? Hello, thank you for allowing me to speak today. My name is Deborah McConnell, and I work for the California Indian Basket Weavers Association, and I am the Northwestern California's field director, and my work is primarily in the Klamath Trinity region, and I am a basketry teacher and a cultural arts teacher, and the mission of the organization is to preserve, promote, and perpetuate California Indian basket weaving traditions and practices. And right now, our programs in the Klamath Trinity region, we serve about approximately 170 youth and adults in basketry activities. And one of the main things that we really stress with the basket weavers is that we are an integral part of our environment, and that everything has a purpose, and that it's not only just basket weaving. We're in the environment, and we're gathering our materials, and it's a social. It involves our social environment, our physical environment, and our spiritual environment. And with that in mind, we look at everything, and because we're all connected in one way or another. To our environment and to our neighbors and to everything, every living thing. And when we weave our baskets, we believe that we weave with being in a good frame of mind, and that when we weave with plants, they're live plants. And then when we weave our baskets, all of our feelings and our good thoughts go into that basket. So that when we finish our basket, that basket is a beautiful basket and it has good feelings in it. Because a lot of our baskets are used in our ceremonies, and they're used to carry our babies. They're used to prepare our foods. They're used for just about every aspect in our lives. And the river is important to us because we gather our materials along the river. We gather our willow roots and willow sticks, and a lot of times when we prepare those materials, we use our mouth to prepare the materials, and then some of the like our baby rattles, our babies chew on them, you know, and they tease. And one thing that we've been worried about or concerned about, especially on the Klamath River, is that the poor water quality, and because the river is always so low, and the health of the river is so bad, there have been a lot of warnings about don't swim in the water, and you know, and there's warnings about animal health from drinking the water. There's all of those precautions that they have in the newspapers, and now our basket weavers are concerned about the quality of our basket materials because we use those materials, and it's dangerous for us. And as a child, I was always told that everything's relevant, and we're connected to everything, every living thing in the environment. And just like we're connected, my people are connected to you because you guys are, you know, you're in control of, you know, the destiny of our rivers. And I would really like to ask you to seriously consider taking out the dams and in the meanwhile taking a serious look at the quality of our rivers, because they're horrible. You go there now and the water is really warm and it doesn't smell good. There's a lot of moss, and it's really sad, because we're all a part of this big environment. We're all connected in one way or another. And thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Okay, thank you. Zeke Grader, followed by Jeff Boyle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name, for the record, is Zeke Grader, and I'm the Executive Director for the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations. We represent working fishing men and women in the commercial fishing fleet along the West Coast, here in California, extending from Santa Barbara through Eureka. As many of you know, we were the plaintiff. Has probably caused you all this grief in this, having to review all these TMDLs.
Thanks.
And for that, I apologize. On the other hand, though, I think I want you all to realize that when we took on the issue of going after and going to court, suing the EPA to try and force TMDLs, it was out of real necessity. We had, as many of you know, lost our coho salmon fishery in the mid-90s. This was a fishery that at one time represented up to half of our catch during the 50s and 60s off the coast. Some 5-6 million pounds of good salmon landed here in California. We lost that fishery shortly, a couple years thereafter. It was listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act, and as we watched, even though there was no fishing, those numbers continued to decline. You know, so it's pretty obvious to us that there were some problems in the rivers, and as we looked at it carefully, is that water quality was a major impairment, a major impediment to both the ongoing survival as well as recovery of those fish. And I think then what we saw in 2002 with the massive fish kill, both of returning spawners, but also juvenile fish, which everybody tended to overlook, which necessitated then the near total closure of our fishery off the coast, going all the way almost to the Columbia River and on down to Monterey Bay because of the Klamath losses. That this was significant, and it just really brought home the point to us that we had done the right thing in that litigation, and it was critical that the Klamath water quality issues be addressed as quickly as possible. For that reason, we are pleased at the progress made so far by your staff in coming up with and developing this TMDL that's going to be extremely important for us to assure that never again are we going to have closures necessitated by the Klamath River. We are working on the Central Valley issues. That's another one, but certainly on the Klamath, this is going to be absolutely important. It's not only important that we can, again, bring these fish back into production, which we'd seen before, but do the type of restoration that we had hoped that this TMDL will bring about, probably the removal, finally, of these antiquated old dams, restoring the river and bringing the fish back all the way up the river and utilizing good water quality. I just wanted to mention those few things. Vivian Hellowell is here from our organization, is going to give you some more detailed comments from our side. But let me just briefly say that I know there's been some issues raised about the science here, particularly about the modeling. We've had people look at that. We were concerned, oh, my God, there's something wrong here. And as far as we can tell, everything that your board is, everything that your staff has done, the modelers that they've been used, is in fact sound. So I think what we've seen here is a tempest in a teapot over the USGS's some of their statements. The other thing is, of course, we had hoped that you would establish milestones for this and adopt this as quickly as possible so we comply with the deadline and also put in place as quickly as possible an action plan. And again, I really appreciate the work of this board and particularly of your staff. I think you have a good TMDL in place, and I think with the waivers in that, many of the concerns that are from people in this room about their agricultural operations should, I think, be addressed, and I think we'll be able to get at the major problems of blue-green algae and maybe bring a lot of those issues to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Thank you.
Thank you, Zeke. Just one question in terms of proportion. Klamath contributes to the fish?
Klamath right now contributes between 5 to 10%. Is all. Central Valley accounts for about 90% of our production. That, however, is, keep in mind, with the Klamath at very low levels. We think this is the third largest salmon river in the lower 48 after the Columbia and after the Central Valley system. I think, certainly, if we can bring it back to production, we could be looking at it contributing up to 25 or 30%. But even if it only contributed 1%, the fact is our fisheries are managed by Klamath River stocks. So in years when they're impaired, even though Central Valley fish may be abundant, we cannot go out in the ocean. That's exactly what happened in 2005, 2006. So even though it may not put a lot of fish on our back deck, our access to Central Valley stocks, when those are healthy, are impaired because, for management reasons, because they mix in the ocean. We cannot access those, and that's really what happened during 2005, 2006. This most recent closures, of course, were brought about by excessive pumping in the Delta, but we'll bring that before your Central Valley Regional Board.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Next speaker, Jeff Foyle, followed by the Klamath Riverkeeper. And I have two, maybe three cards of people designating themselves as the riverkeepers. So I'm going to ask one of them to come forward, or if it's a paired representation, so be it. But they're on deck. Jeff?
Good afternoon.
It feels like it, but we're not there yet.
Oh, it was afternoon at 4 o'clock this morning. First of all, thank you for giving us this opportunity to address you. My name is Jeff Fowle. I do reside over in Aetna in the Scott Valley. I am here representing Siskiyou County Farm Bureau and, to a certain extent, California Farm Bureau. I have some comments that are general in nature. We submitted written comments previously, and so my comments today are based and tweaked, so to say, upon staff's presentation this morning. To begin with, it needs to be brought out that what this TMDL implies in terms of the basin-wide regulation of agricultural activities, and when I say agriculture, that includes timber, is unreasonable. You, by law, are required to complete this TMDL, and it is your responsibility to make sure that that TMDL addresses accurately all beneficial uses fairly. And the TMDL must be as accurate as possible in order to be effective. And I'm saying this because it has been brought out, and I have read the mentioned comments from PacifiCorps as well as USGS, and I respectfully disagree with the previous speaker in that the model is effective, because the model assumes that the Klamath River is a cold water fishery. And it needs to be recognized that the Klamath is a conduit from the ocean to its subsequent tributaries, some of which are cold water fisheries, Some of those themselves are not, and they also in turn serve as a conduit to the actual spawning grounds. And this was a discussion that we had back with the Scott TMDL, and it was a concern that we had that the Scott River main stem itself was being considered a cold water fishery. And our concern, and it's what we have seen, is that the transition of turning the main stem Scott into a cold water fishery has indeed improved coho spawning habitat. But it has negatively impacted the Chinook, because the Chinook do not spawn in the same grounds now that they once did, because they are now a different type of refugia. And I think if you take a look at Department of Fish and Game spawning surveys over the trend for the past 10 years, you will see this transition. And so I come back to the idea of the model. The Klamath, in terms of the model, cannot be considered a cold water fishery, and there is the basis for our concern with the modeling. And I think we've tried to voice that with staff. That being said, I encourage you, the board, to do what, if we take a look at our federal situation dealing with health care, put the brakes on for a minute. Let's make sure that the model that we are using to derive the objectives is accurate first. Because without accurate and attainable objectives, the implementation plan itself is worthless. The second point that I want to bring up is the staff's recommendation, and I appreciate the graphic that this was new to us, and I thank you, Dave, for the clarification. It's my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, that in 2011 and 12 respectively, when the Scott and Shasta TMDLs waivers expire, the idea is that there will be a basin-wide waiver that would then encompass those two tributaries. And I would offer you the following. I would highly recommend that there is a ground visit and a thorough evaluation of both the Scott and Shasta systems to determine whether or not a waiver is even needed anymore. And should those two systems not be suffering from limitation any further, that all regulations and permits at that time be lifted and not be included in the Klamath Basin waiver. Finally, to connect the dots, and this is where the last speaker and I think actually have some common ground and some agreement. I'll try to connect the dots for you, and he did it quite well. We had the fish being listed, which then kicked off the need for TMDLs. The assumption was made that water quality inland was the reason for the decrease in the numbers. I will not dispute that some past practices were not environmentally friendly. But we are not living in yesterday, we're living in today. I would remind you that the Carter administration in the 70s probably had the biggest negative impact to our domestic fisheries than anything else, when the international fishing boundary was reduced from 150 miles to 25. Our commercial fishermen are having to sit in the dock on their boats, are selling and are struggling, while foreign countries are coming into what used to be our waters and harvesting our fish. That being said, and I have mentioned this a couple times, I highly encourage you to work with Department of Fish and Game to come up with a ratio of spawners to out-migrants to truly reflect the health of our fishery inland. Because I would submit to you that our ratio is very respectable for the fish that actually return. What we need to do is increase the number returning. And that's going to take a major step on your part, and I'm glad the EPA is here because the feds are, need to play an intricate role in this, in getting that international fishing boundary extended back out. Because until we get the adults to spawn, we won't see a return of a healthy fishery. I will finally leave you with this, and it's a question that came up a couple months ago. I would like staff to take a look, and legal was probably going to have to take a look at this as well. What is the relationship going to be between this TMDL and the existing TMDLs and the 2009 Food Safety Act? Because there is language in the 2009 Food Safety Act which mirrors California's leafy green policy, which places restrictions and guidelines on private land as to what type of habitat is going to be allowed. There is language in there that actually suggests that some of the habitat we have been so instrumental in putting in place, according to the Food Safety Act, they're going to want it reduced and eliminated to remove the wildlife, which may be contributing to an E. coli factor to something being produced. So we've got an issue here, and I think it's something that until 2 months ago when it passed out of committee and flew by, really wasn't something of concern. But there's language in there that I think you as a North Coast board and also the state board need to take a look at. What is this relationship going to be? Particularly, this isn't going to affect you, but when it comes down to the central district, they're going to have a fun one with this. And so with that, I leave you with a thank you for the opportunity to address you, and I look forward to a continued dialogue in person as we had with the Shasta and the Scott TMDLs. I think we can come up with a positive tool here, but the communication needs to be improved. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. And just as an observation, you're a busy farmer, but you're getting close to earning a law degree, because I heard two, not one, finalies in there before the end. So. All right. Have you introduce yourself, Klamath Riverkeeper?
Yeah, good morning, members of the board and North Coast Regional Board staff. My name is Erica Terrence, and I hold the job of Klamath Riverkeeper. Essentially what that means is I'm the program director. I also work for the nonprofit organization Klamath Riverkeeper, so I thought I'd offer a little clarity. You will hear from one of my colleagues as well today who works for Klamath Riverkeeper, and she's our outreach and science director. Again, thank you for hearing from me and the rest of the folks who are here to comment today. I want to emphasize that I've read through the TMDLs or the draft TMDL that we had an opportunity to review, and I think the numeric limits that the staff has proposed are basically good limits. They're grounded in sound science. I think that they're on the right track. I also want to emphasize that without language to make these TMDLs clearly enforceable, I'm not sure those limits will do us much good. So I want to make sure that we've built a TMDL that can be effectively implemented. Basically, I would recommend, you know, again, proceed with these pollution limits that are built into the draft here, but be clearer about the schedules for compliance and clearer about what mechanisms can be used if needed to make sure that we're complying with these TMDLs in a timely way. That's the point I really want to stress the most. I think our TMDLs are really as good as we make them. We're on the right track, and we need to not just monitor, which is good. We need to provide what we're going to do in case it doesn't work, or in case we're not moving along as quickly as we need to be. You know, the Klamath River was posted again for toxic algae this year. As you know, the Klamath River is barely fishable and definitely not swimmable. I'm down in the middle Klamath, and I'm out on the river often, and I try to avoid swimming in it as much as possible. According to the Clean Water Act standard, that water bodies should be fishable and swimmable. Again, this river is barely fishable and not really swimmable, and I think we need to fix that. We don't have a lot of time. Again, the need for aggressive schedules for compliance and enforcement mechanisms. I think the idea of the basin-wide waiver, I can see some reasons for that. For instance, I think it makes sense to integrate the Scott and Shasta TMDL compliance with compliance of the main stem TMDL. But I want to make sure, again, that we have mechanisms for figuring out where the pollution is coming from and how to enforce these limits as we need to, potentially on an individual basis. So when we talk about basin-wide waivers, I want to make sure we're clear that we want to see some accountability in the final TMDL that you guys come out with. While we're talking about the Scott and Shasta TMDLs, it's basically a flow crisis in the Scott and Shasta rivers this year for fish that are migrating up the main stem of the Klamath River. And a lot of those fish are going to try to go home up the Scott or the Shasta. And they'll get up into the canyon, and then, you know, there are long dewatered stretches and disconnected pools and fish stranded in those pools. And I know that, you know, we heard earlier about flow recommendations for the Shasta. I'd like to ask on the record here, what's become of those flow recommendations? It doesn't seem as though those are necessarily being met. And, you know, the Scott's at 1 CFS and the Shasta's at 6.5 CFS, and that was back in August. So it's gotten hotter and drier since then. This is a flow crisis for our fisheries, and we think something needs to be done about that now. But also fixing that problem in the long range basically means, in order to talk about, you know, water quality in the main stem, you have to talk about quantity. You can't. There's no getting around that. So at the mouths of the Scott and the Shasta rivers, we think that those two rivers need to comply with the main stem standards and objectives. We'd like to see at least further exploration of quantity as an issue coming from the Scott and the Shasta. Again, we don't think you can really start talking about what the quality problems are or the, you know, the contributions to the main stem in terms of nutrients are or temperature is without first having some water in the stream. And those streams are going dry. Again, a flow recommendation for the Scott may also be warranted. Just in responding to a couple of points that I've heard from previous commenters, it was mentioned that, you know, that the TMDL maybe represents unnecessary regulation. And I want to remind the board that, you know, the TMDLs are legally required. This is about compliance with the Clean Water Act and consent decree, as Mr. Grader mentioned earlier. And we basically think it's not optional. You know, these regulations are clearly needed. Beneficial uses are impaired. And in terms of, poverty in the basin, we see that throughout the basin, and it's definitely sad. As much as we can't afford to lose, you know, farming income, we can't afford to lose fish or cultures downstream. So I just want to balance that perspective out. I also heard a comment that Siskiyou County doesn't benefit very much from salmon, and I can't help but mention that I think Siskiyou County as a whole would benefit more from salmon if the dams came out. So again, in terms of the technical aspects of this TMDL, I want to emphasize, I think it's scientifically sound, numerically sound. Please continue on the same track and include as much enforceable language as you can. I think it's in the California Water Code. In fact, it's Section 13242 of the California Water Code says that you have to describe the actions that are going to be taken and describe ways that those actions are going to meet the standards and objectives, describe monitoring mechanisms, and then describe what enforcement actions can be taken. So I think it's within the board's authority to do that, and I would encourage you to look towards the Garcia TMDL as a model since that was really done there. So that concludes my comments. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Erica. Michelle Berger-Chesky, followed by Kevin Collins.
Thank you, members of the board. I represent the Mount Shasta Bioregional Ecology Center. We've been around for 20 years and have been protecting the natural resources and the beauty and health of our Mount Shasta bioregion. Every year, our organization sponsors a rafting trip for our members and their families, and many of our members utilize Klamath River for recreation, fishing, and just its beauty. Water quality and health of the natural environment on the Klamath River are important to us as part of this natural world that we live in. And we commend the North Coast Regional Water Board and staff for addressing these water quality concerns in the Klamath Basin. We realize that these are difficult problems, and this step, the TMDL, is an important step toward halting the progressive deterioration of the Klamath River. And at the same time, I want to say that we hear the concerns of the communities, and There is a need to look in the long term. A healthy river means healthy communities. A degraded river is also the degradation of communities. We hear the economic issues, and we believe there are steps, measures that can be taken to alleviate those, and I think those should be addressed and emphasized, because the river is going to get healthy by all of us working together. We're aware that for the past several years there have been toxic algae accumulations and attendant threat to human health, and we're very concerned about that. And also the economic concern for that it does affect the tourism industry, the many people who come and use the Klamath River as a recreational place. We're basically in agreement with many of the points that have been made here, and I don't want to take too much time. Many points that were made by the Klamath River keepers, especially about the flows on the Shasta and the Scott Rivers. It really is a crisis, and the overall picture cannot be helped unless there are actual flows in the tributaries. So we really support including that in the TMDL measures. We just want to encourage the North Coast Water Board to really stick with this until the Klamath is well on its way to recovery, because right now there are really no public trust agencies that are protecting the public trust resources of these aquatic ecosystems, and their health is vital to our health as well. So I want to thank you for these efforts.
Okay, thank you. Kevin Collins, followed by Petey Brooker and Chair, I was just going to make a comment. I've got five more group or organization cards. I'm going to try to get through them before we take a break for lunch. So to all five of you, my apologies. You're up against lunch, you know.
Mr. Chairman, board
Kevin
members.
Collins.
My name is Kevin Collins. I'm a commercial fisherman. I'm the vice president of the Humboldt Fishermen's Marketing Association as well. The Humboldt Fishermen's Marketing Association is the oldest and largest group representing commercial fishermen in Humboldt Bay, in Humboldt County. I fished for 37 years. I've been an operator of a vessel for 32 myself. I've seen quite a few changes in the period of time. In the mid-70s, Eureka used to be filled with boats, hundreds and hundreds of boats that would come from out of state, from Washington and Oregon, to come fish off California, out of Eureka specifically. I can remember one night that was calm off Eureka in April, counting 500 mast lights drifting at night. Now there's no fishery off of Eureka. There was a sport fishery for 10 days this year, but there hasn't been a commercial fishery other than 3, 4, 5, 6 days in the last decade. Our numbers as an association have gone from near 400 to less than 100. The licensed salmon trawlers in California have gone from 5,000 to about 1,000. We're talking an 80%, 4 out of 5 of us have gone out of business, gone by the wayside. I want to agree with one of the Siskiyou representatives that spoke earlier. It's not right. She was speaking to the effect that Siskiyou should not have to sacrifice, that some benefit should be derived somewhere else on the river. I agree. I don't think it's right that 4 out of 5 of my fellow fishermen have gone out of business in order that others upriver have been able to maintain business as usual. Fish need water. And I have to address one other speaker, the fellow from the Scott River Farm Bureau. His facts are completely wrong, 180 degrees wrong. In 1977, in the Carter administration, yes, there was a change. State waters go out 3 miles. At that time and historically, federal waters went out 20 miles. In 1977, the United States claimed 200 miles. And at that time, foreign fishing ceased inside of 200 miles. So that is not an issue. That's a pure boogeyman based on nothing. Zeke's point, the Klamath may only represent a smaller percentage of the entirety of the salmon in the ocean, but it is the major reason we have experienced these closures. Since 1979 until the last 2 years, every one of the closures, every one of the restrictions that we have experienced between Coos Bay and Half Moon Bay, and then 3 years ago as far down as Monterey Bay, up to the Oregon-Washington border, or because of the Klamath River. And it is inappropriate that one business, I mean, Eureka used to be, have machine shops, hydraulic shops, gear stores, any number of service industries that are gone now. It's a multiplier that affects not just the fishing industry, but the entirety of the community. We appreciate what the farmers and the food that they provide. As a matter of fact, I feel we are kindred spirits. We get up early in the morning. We work hard and long hours. We have uncertainty as to our catch. We have miserable conditions often. The price is never a given. The harvest is never a given. All we ask is that we be able to produce food as well as they do. And I don't think it's a win-lose situation, a zero-sum game. The work this group did with the Garcia River, I think, shows that the ranchers, livestock farm ranchers on that river, have not only gotten past their resistance to this process, but have found that it benefited them. There was an excellent presentation that was made to our fishermen group here a couple months ago by a group in the Garcia, where in the process of improving the water quality, it also stabilized the land alongside the rivers for the ranchers And the ranchers have become some of the greatest proponents of that program at this point in time. So I think I've touched on most of it. I guess I'll say the Humble Fishermen's Marketing Association, myself, and every fisherman I know would support anything you can do to improve water quality, and in particular, the staff recommendations for the TMDL.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you. Patty Brueker, followed by Vivian Hallowell.
I want to thank the Water Board for coming here today. It's really important that we can engage in these kind of activities and the input to you. My name is Petey Brucker. I live on the Salmon River in Siskiyou County. And it is also, I've lived there for about 35 years. I've been pretty deeply involved in fish, water, restoration, resource use issues for at least the last 20 years. And one of the things that I've been very much involved in is fisheries restoration. I've been the sub-basin coordinator in the Salmon River for the Klamath Fisheries Task Force, and I served as their technical work group and was the coordinator for their group for three and a half years. And I thought it was important to give you a little background for me, that my relationship to restoration. That said, really, I do want to applaud the efforts where people are making to come forward and to try to do the right thing to help restore the rivers and the fisheries. It's very good. And there are things that are happening. I think that, basically, one of the mantras that I heard all through my experience with the Klamath Fisheries Task Force was that we needed to have a whole basin process, and we need to pull together. I think that you're on the right track to do that, to bring it all together, looking at the Klamath River and making sure you're addressing the tributaries and how they all work together, and how the Oregon part of it plays into it is very important. Because I don't think you can get there unless you do that. I also subscribe to that there are incremental and site-specific things that need to be done with people, absolutely. I've also been very involved with the Salmon River TMDL. And to help you collect information, provide a direction for what's going on there. I also work with the, today I'm representing the Klamath Forest Alliance. I'm a Klamath River coordinator for that and have been for about 10 years. That group's about 20 years old, and it represents many people who use the Klamath River for a variety of things, for swimming, for recreation, and things like that. So I have a pretty close relationship with the river. I have to say that in the Klamath River that we have seen starting to identify more and more problems that are existing there. Things like fish disease, fish kills that are happening are horrendous. We have every year we have juvenile fish kills that are pretty bad. This year the information showed more than half of the juvenile fish died because of what's happening in the Klamath River. And things like toxic algae, we're starting to find that there's other impacting things that are there. So for me, I think it's very important that we recognize that the Klamath River's in trouble and that we need to fix it. I applaud you for coming forward and taking the steps to do that. I think that's really what's needed. Regarding the Klamath River TMDL itself, I've read the document. I've been very familiar with what's going on in there. I've looked at the models. I've talked to a lot of people who are related to both science and experiential knowledge. There's some things that you need to tweak and be aware of. I think when you're doing modeling, you put that into your assumptions, and then you figure out where are there variables that you need to tweak, and you see how big they are. I'm pretty pleased to hear that they're not that big, which is good. I think you're moving forward in a good way in that. I want to applaud your staff for doing a good job. Thank you. You have a good staff. I think that the draft does have some things in it that really are some of the things that are needed. You need to have milestones or targets to get to try to achieve things, to understand where there are problems, and then look at milestones to achieve things. I think that you see that in there. You know, and basically there are also elements that have to go along with it. We have to have adequate monitoring to be able to review to see how well are you implementing the plan, the Klamath Action Plan, to do that. And that really, you know, it takes basically the tasks and the actions that you're wanting to do. You need to develop cooperation. You need to develop coordination amongst all the entities. I think that water is something that flows through us all in the Klamath River, and that connects us all. And the Klamath River is really central to all those things. You know, in developing the tasks in the Klamath Action Plan, I think that initially it's good to develop ways to voluntarily get people involved, and that's encouragement to help them do that. I think that you'll see a cast of supporters or entities come to help to do that. But I also believe that you do need benchmarks to measure to see if you're getting to or not. And if you're not getting there, I think there needs to be some way to have some accountability and some transparency in the process to then move folks forward to say, hey, if we really appreciate the people that get on board and try to get there. As you evaluate your monitoring and then make recommendations, you'll find the adaptive measures that you need to go forward to improve things. But I think you also may find, if you are finding places where if you're not meeting your goals in your benchmarks, then you have to have some kind of contingency to move forward with some kind of enforcement to bring people into compliance. My hope is that, and what I've seen, is that there is a willingness to move forward, and I think we need to encourage that amongst the sub-basins and different peoples who are involved in this. There certainly is something, if you look at the whole Klamath River, there's a whole cast of beneficial users. And, you know, salmon evolved here. They are a cold water species. So I think there are real good reasons why fish should be part of the Klamath River and the Klamath Basin and all the tributaries. And in recognizing that, I think that's where you see the, unfortunately, sort of a fish versus farming kind of approach. And if we're going to get there, we're going to have to all work together to get there. That's why I would applaud you in having your first step, initial steps, to go forward in that method that you have described in the plan. But I also think there's benchmarks to get to. You know, in closing, I think that I support the direction of the board to develop an integrated plan throughout the whole basin. We need that. Somewhere we need one basin thinking, and I think you guys are one of the shops to do that, and it's very important. And I think that it's very important that the tributaries like of Tule Lake, or Tule Lake and then the Lost River, actually have a strong contribution to the Klamath River water quality, and they need to be very involved in coming into compliance and figuring out ways to do this. And I would say the same with the rest of Oregon. So when Oregon delivers water to California, we have good water quality, or at least it's not pushing us over the edge too far. But, you know, in that, I want to say one thing, too. I've heard a lot about the dams in today's discussion. In looking at the dams, technically, the water quality issues, some of them are, they make the water warmer in the summer. There's no doubt about it. You can talk to Mike Diaz. He'll show you that. They make, which is bad for fish and the conditions that we have. They also make the water colder than usual in the winter, which reduces the ability for fish to develop. So basically, you have smaller fish that are developing the Klamath. The bigger the fish, the more it's going to survive. If what we're doing to the fish is reducing their ability to grow, they're not going to do well. They're going to be more prone to disease. They're not going to get out of the system, so you see a lot of problems with that. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll call out the names before lunch. They're Vivian Helwell, Rick Costales, and Robert Davis. All others will be after lunch. After lunch.
May I ask why the
I asked for a representative from the Klamath Keeper. I got one. And I offered, if they were parallel presentations, to make it so, but we got what we got from Erica. Vivian. These are representing organizations. After lunch, we'll move on to individuals. Vivian.
Thank you, Chairman Anderson and members of the board. Vivian Helliwell, Watershed Conservation Director of Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations and Institute for Fisheries Resources. Based on our review of the TMDL, our organization believes the technical analysis is sound and sufficient for setting the TMDL, which is setting the load reduction limits, and implementation needs to begin now. The TMDL assumes that flow standards can be met from Oregon and from the Lost River, the Drain, and the other tributaries. We do not know when those standards will be met or if they will be met. So California needs to work with Oregon, as the EPA director was saying. And in the meantime, the main stem standards need to be precautionary during the interim until those tributary standards can be met. Particularly the Lost River, we would like to see an action plan for the Lost River, because in order to meet the nutrient loading standards for the main stem, and rather than arguing over the percentage of reduction needed, let's get started cleaning up toward reducing the nutrient load from the Lost River that contributes to the main stem. I'm from a fishing family in Eureka, California. I fished salmon for 20 years out of Fort Bragg commercially, and that was a full-time job for 7 months of the year. 5 members of my family fished for salmon. Now, my husband still fishes Dungeness crab in the winter, which is a healthy fishery. It fluctuates with ocean conditions, while the salmon have been in steady decline for over 30 years. That indicates there are problems with their in-river habitat. Our first fishing closures to protect Klamath salmon were in 1978, 30 years ago. And in some years, we've had entire ocean closures from Oregon to Mexico, restricting our access to other fish because of the weak Klamath stocks. And these are not voluntary measures. We're out of business to protect these fish. The salmon belong to the people of California and are held in trust by the government for everyone, including the consumers, the sportsmen, tribal uses, and everyone who benefits from those salmon. They bring nutrients back from the ocean to the forests. The Clean Water Act is for everyone. It's to provide clean water for everyone downstream from others. My husband and I are longtime members of Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations through our local Fishermen's Association. And today, some of our expenses are paid by a sport fishing family business from Eureka, Phil and Candy Glenn on the Shellback, who support pollution reduction on the Klamath River for their business as well. I spoke with many people from the coast who could not leave their jobs to come here to testify today. And when you see Mr. Zeke Grader, Mr. Glenn Spain at hearings, and myself, we're under the direction of our board of directors, which represents fishing men and women from 14 ports from Oregon to Morro Bay. We are all downstream from the Klamath River. Some of the testimony that I've heard today reminds me that we just need to get to know our neighbors on the river better so that we understand each other's business needs and so we can work together for solutions, cleaning up the pollution on the river so that we can all benefit. And Mr. Collins mentioned briefly that farmers and ranchers on the Garcia River at Point Arena, just down the coast, had the first TMDL pollution reduction goals. They formed a watershed group, and following the lead of dairy rancher Henry Stogie Stornetta, they made use of public money and hundreds of volunteers to revegetate their stream banks with willows, leaving a place for cattle to cross the river and to drink. And in a few years, the willows were 30 feet tall holding the banks when it flooded so that they didn't lose acres of their property in the floods. Then the willows build up the terrace and deepen the channel so that you get cold, deep pools in the main stem. Following the work that they did over 10 years with a narrower, deeper channel, colder stream bed, in a good ocean year, species of salmon came back to spawn in the Garcia that hadn't been seen there in decades. And they are now seen spawning in the main stem itself, not just in the tributaries. The estuary had been filled in with years of sediment and slow water. So the complexity was restored up the river. And the Garcia River is admittedly a much smaller river than the Klamath and has smaller problems. But working together, the citizens can work to find solutions to these problems. We would like to have a future with salmon in it, and we appreciate the work of the Water Board and the State of California and the citizens who are working on their farms and ranches to help keep the river clean. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Vivian. Rick Castellas, followed by Robert Davis.
Thank you for the opportunity to address you. I realize Siskiyou County's had a lot of input this morning, but like you folks, I think probably we are going to be having, in some way, shape, or form, having to deal with these TMDLs on a day-to-day basis more than anybody else, and I appreciate your recognition and allowing us to talk about some of these issues. Some County Council requested that I sort of bat cleanup, and the supervisors talked about a number of issues, but the ones that the salient issues that we feel are critical, he wanted me to reemphasize. The socioeconomic impact analysis of a CEQA regime, which we've talked about not only for you guys, but us as well. The people in this county are now essentially with waivers, WDRs, and your discretionary action. It's under the whole CEQA regime, and I think everybody can understand and reasonably foresee costs. The fees that were mentioned for the waiver were, you know, no fee or a fee less than the WDR. I think there's enough history of government and these programs that we can reasonably foresee that there's going to be fees. And generally speaking, you heard from the timber industry where they go. They tend to go through the roof. So there was no economic analysis of that regime. There was analysis of, you know, stream restoration, fencing, all of that stuff, but not being associated with CEQA. With regard to Mr. Leland's point that there was a lot of misunderstanding with regard to the Water Board's ability to regulate water quality outside of the Clean Water Act. I read my comments, and I see that it may have been thought that that was one of the comments that misunderstood that, but I understand you have two things, the Clean Water Act as well as the Porter-Cologne Act. Your ability to regulate water generally has to do with nuisance, impairment of beneficial uses, things like that. But just regulating water per se is, I'm not sure, but I think it's not in your charge. There has to be some impact threatened to water quality. And the vast majority of people, when you talk, as was referred to in the TMDL document, every grazer or anyone associated with irrigated agriculture, the vast majority of those people aren't affecting water quality and deserve no regulation. The suction dredging and the Forest Service issues with making a more expeditious permitting process for the Forest Service. That certainly addressed our comments. I appreciate that. Dropping suction dredging, as I understand you did, because it's a moot point at this point by virtue of what the legislature did and the fact that Department of Fish and Game is going to regulate that. I appreciate that. That I hope you do the same thing with the timber rules. The Board of Forestry recently passed the TNI rules specifically to address cold water fisheries. The Board of Forestry has spent extensive time and an extensive literature review in determining what suits forestry practices with regard to these issues, and they have now decided on these rules. And I think the Board of Forestry, having recognized the importance of cold water fisheries and the impacts of forestry and figuring we've got to do something about that, I hope you recognize that that board with timber, regulating timber and all the various impacts of timber, that they are the ones, by virtue of having the staff specifically devote to these issues and focused on that, that that will be satisfactory with you. That pretty much covers the salient points on the board, but I would like to make the point that, the board spoke well. They're my bosses. They spoke well, and they spoke well for their bosses, which is the people that elected them. But I'm going to be, in a large degree, the guy, the contact guy, working with your staff and in charge of figuring out what the county's response, and a lot of it's going to fall on my shoulders. And I see we got three issues here with regard to this TMDL. We've got, you know, what is it we've got? What does the science tell us the status of the river? Then we've got to figure out where we want to be, and we got to figure out how we're going to get there. The first issue on where we are, that's science. That's technical stuff. That's not policy stuff. I'm a policy guy. I'm content when I get the sense that scientists are struggling with these issues, and it's a pretty much a knockdown, drag-out fight. I pretty well feel that we're trying to get to the bottom of what these issues are, and I think it's apparent at this point that science is struggling with what it is that we've got. And they're going to be, until the cows come home or the fish come back or they don't, we're going to be struggling over the science. So that is going to take care of itself with regard, the same sort of issue with regard to where we want to be. We're essentially setting a target that we're all going to aim for. And that's going to be up there. And I don't have an objection with the target. I've never mind shooting for something beyond my probable ability to reach all the time. That's what targets are for. They're something to aim for. But it's how you deal with people when they miss or when they decide, you know, I just really don't want to shoot at that particular target. And that is where the short rounds, the overshots, the misdirected fire, the ricochets, all of that stuff, when we are missing that target, we undermine all of our efforts. When you cast a net, and we discussed this yesterday, when you cast a net, you cast a lot of innocent people in this thing who can look you in the eye and tell you, I am not affecting water quality. When you punish people for, I studied white rats enough before I got sick of it, but I do know that punishment is not the way that you achieve behavioral modification to a greater degree. It's reward. We're not here. We don't have the money to pay for a lot of this stuff, but the only thing that we can offer is improvement, regulation. And Chairman Anderson, I took to heart a lot of what you said. How are we going to draw this box around the people that we really, you know, we want to encourage everybody to shoot for these targets. We certainly want to do that. And the people that are negatively impacting water quality, we want to target those people. We want to get at those issues. And the idea of this draft is currently where we've got collateral damage with this stuff, and the military has found that collateral damage undermines their effort all the time. We've spent millions of dollars developing better targeting systems to minimize civilian casualties, and that's what we got to do. When we get these people sucked in, we're just going to have a lot of fighting that we don't. And I appreciate your offer, yesterday to allow the board to talk, and I'm certainly looking forward to staff. I do have some ideas from on the suggestion of how we can target this stuff better, and that's what we're going to do. The critical point, and this is, I know a lot of people are tired of hearing about coordination as a tool. It's misunderstood. It's all of this stuff. What coordination's about is just you guys and us guys getting together to assure that these things can be as consistent as possible. It doesn't mean you guys have to do what our ordinances say. It doesn't mean you have to do what we say. But as to the greatest degree possible, there's lots of federal statutes, state statutes, case law saying, look, we got to work together and make these as consistent as possible. Siskiyou County, we have a right to farm ordinance. When you guys have a proposal that essentially takes away that right and brings it under a waiver or some sort of permit regime, I don't think that that's achieving the consistency that is being sought in that kind of stuff. So thank you very much for the opportunity to address you guys, and I do look forward to working with you guys.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Rick. Robert Davis. And Robert will be our final speaker now that we have arrived in the afternoon, but before we take a lunch break.
Good afternoon. I have a great speech here. It's very short.
Okay.
We've been waiting for a long time for this scientific study that's going to be impartial and come up with a lot of answers. We have gotten studies, but we have not gotten any kind of result from it. The dam removal will increase the TMDLs beyond any present consideration that's being taken into, and possibly beyond a point that can be corrected for restoration. I hope you people will understand that and take that into account. I have attended a lot of these meetings where information has been submitted explaining the removal and studies that have been done and the consequences of dam destruction. The resulting damage to stream and fish have been explained already. From the information regarding the bond proposal and a request for dam removal by our state senator, Sam Anastead, it's evident that the decisions are being made by those in authority who have an agenda that ignores common sense, science, and the available information. History should be considered before doing anything. The Klamath fishery was previously deleted in the time before the dams. This was when the canneries paid the tribes to supply fish. Soon the fish could no longer supply the canneries, which caused them to close. The fishery could not support the primitive fishing that was surely necessary to manage closely the operation of how the factory ships and the modern fishing methods are used now. The hatchery has been the source of support for increased harvest repeatedly. The information that's published about the hatchery supply is that the hatchery supply is put into the river where the loss is approximately 90% due to disease. This would assume that the hatchery personnel are incompetent. This is certainly not the case, and the claims are untrue. These are dedicated people, and they are doing a great job, and if you will check the catch, you will see that the main part of it is hatchery fish. So they're doing a good job of what they're supposed to do. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, we're going to take a lunch break. The board will go into closed session and be the chair's intent to crack the gavel at 1 o'clock and come back. Dennis Specht had wanted to speak. He may have left. Tim Hemstreet, followed by Kristen Raymond Damian will be first up when we come back. Thank you all.